Good evening, planet Earth. Good evening, creatures of the evening time, creatures of the darkness that arise from the mist that's out back near the porta potty. Good evening to the kings of the amphibians, to the frogs of midnight. Good evening to the strange specters that wander through the dying forests. Good evening to the swamp man who is waiting for his or her time. The swamp person, the day will come. Your day will come, swamp creature, swamp person, not gender specific. But today is August the 27th, 2021, in the age of boblimptalk.com. Yes, indeed, boblimptalk, that is spelled Bravo, Oscar, Bravo, Lima, India, Mike, Papa, Tango, Oscar, Charlie, Kilo? Oh, did I say Tango, Oscar, Charlie, Kilo? So it's like if you took Bob, Bravo, Oscar, Bravo, and you took Blimp, Bravo, Lima, India, Mike, Papa, Blimp. And then you took Talk, like the TikTok Talk, Tango, Oscar, Charlie, Kilo, right? And then you added a .com at the end. We are in the age of boblimptalk.com. And currently that takes you to SoundCloud. It's possible that in a few weeks it's going to just take you to my MP3 page. I have to say, I paid SoundCloud almost more or less more than $150 a year for the last few years to host my MP3s. And I have pretty good evidence that they've done some kind of crappy things. And before I go too far, the time here in Utah is almost 10:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. But if you're listening on a shortwave radio, this would be sometime between 11 p.m. and midnight Eastern Standard Time on a Saturday night or a Sunday night, 11 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time. And afterwards, we do a project called the Agorist Emergency Network. If you want to learn more, go to dfgtc.org/AEN. That's Alpha Echo November. I don't know if that helps. I don't know. I am no longer going to probably host my stuff with SoundCloud because I feel like they shadow ban me and I pay them. Why would I pay the person who puts me in a prison? I had one donor during, I think, 2019. And this was a really good donor who had to create like a half a dozen accounts over and over again. And the reason was simple. SoundCloud's algorithm would go through and just simply remove followers. And I've been hovering around, 250 to 300 for about a year, and I think that's the upper limit, whatever. I don't really care. We live in a very crooked world right now, and it's entirely possible that the pittance I pay them does not compare to the money they get from whatever deep state, fraudulent, financial, banker transaction that pays them their paycheck. They probably make more from being scumbags from their perspective right now. But we're going to talk about that, boys and girls, because right now is a moment in time, brothers and sisters. Like I said, it is August the 27th, 2021, as of this recording, and it is 10:30 p.m. almost, plusy minusy, Mountain Standard Time. It is the evening. And we are looking into the darkness at night because the night is dark and it's the evening, baby. And anything can happen in the evening. Anything can happen in the evening. Anything can happen in the evening, first topic. This is a quote from Dr. Freckles, and I don't think it's that clever, and it's probably not that original. And even if it is original, it's rather late, because it refers to a movie from the year 2006, I think. 2006. But here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Sorry, Mike. Sorry, Mike. Sorry, Mike. But stupid doesn't get 500 years. If you've seen the movie Idiocracy, the timeline is that, you know, Joe Bauer, Jack Bauer, Sergeant whoever, average dude, is defrosted sometime 500 years in the future. But here's the problem. I do not know of any kind of organized stupidity at this scale, frankly, anything close to this scale, I do not know of anything in history that got 500 years. Like, I think you get 50 years, maybe you get 60. The Soviet Union got about, you know, 6 or 7 decades, right? It almost went a century. But stupid, fraudulent, criminal, overly, in Byzantine sense, overly complex systems that are filled with people with terrible ideas, people that might not even be stupid, brothers and sisters. I'm sorry. They might just be in a bad system. You know, one of my business heroes is a guy by the name of Deming, and Deming went to Japan after World War II. And he was kind of critical in what's called the quality revolution. He wanted to apply statistical science to factories, to places where you make cars. And his insights into project management and quality control led to things like the Toyota method, which is a literal method you can study, and you can apply that method and you can fix a lot of things just using the Toyota method. Interestingly enough, I think Toyota's quality is going to crap compared to what it used to be. And I don't blame Toyota. I think that they have been forced to live in a fraudulent world. It's a lot like Switzerland. You know, several years ago, but not that long ago, Switzerland, you know, I think they decided to basically disconnect their currency from gold. And I think that's what they did, as I recall. Somebody can email me and complain. But it's kind of like that, for example. I think that they do the things they do because they're being intimidated. I don't think governments are particularly brave. You know, governments are bullies. And so if you want to understand the hierarchy of the world, it's a hierarchy of bullies. And the bully with the biggest fists and the meanest growl and the one most likely to punch you in the stomach is usually the bully that wins. And I hate to say it, but at the world of geopolitics, it's that way. And even if you said, well, what about the cabals and the secret societies? They're still filled with bullies. And inside those structures, the same thing's happening, which I would say is a distinction without a difference. I don't care if it's the president of, you know, Krasnovia, or if it's the secret central banker cabal of the far western structures that is linked to Krasnovia. What I am talking about is that these structures are bully systems, systems of intimidation. They are hierarchical systems of torture and intimidation. So when you look at things like Switzerland or Greece and you say, how could this happen? When you think about Brexit and you realize what a train wreck that was, it's not that complicated. It's a hierarchy of bullies. And in that system, Great Britain is no longer a very big bully. And so a lot of other bullies can come along and punch you in the stomach. And just as likely, it's a cabal, but it's the same group of bullies going around punching each other in the stomach. And I don't know, it could be a satanic pyramid scheme, who knows? But what I am telling you, and I need just to think about this to be optimistic, because this is optimistic. These kinds of ridiculously stupid intimidation, confidence schemes, these types of grifts or cons, these types of frauds, they don't last 500 years. You don't get 500 years. I know there are people right now, and it's kind of creepy, in the freedom movement trying to spin this like, well, it's like the Soviet Union in 1933 or Germany in 33. No, it's like the Soviet Union in 1993. It's like Germany in April 1945 in Berlin. That's what it's really like, I think. And maybe that's scarier. You know, when you think about it, if you just spent 20 grand on a bunch of mining equipment that is dependent upon a deep state integrated circuit manufacturing complex that is dependent upon a deep state managed internet and is dependent upon a highly centralized electricity grid and communications grid, and I can keep going, if you just bought $20,000 or $30,000 worth of mining equipment to mine Ethereum or Bitcoin, and you bought it to plug into the Death Star, like R2-D2, like R2-D2 in episode 4, to plug in, you know, I get it. Because we're all on the same Death Star. I don't say you're dumb to try to make some money. If you can make money doing this, do it. Go forth and do it. But I think some people are afraid the Death Star is basically a Potemkin Death Star. You know, it's a big fraud. It's a giant, super gigantic fraud. I started noticing in software engineering about 10 years ago that what people mostly needed and wanted were people who were able to fix things. Not create things, but fix things. That's an important distinction. Because if you're out there creating solid things at work, you don't really need a lot of fixers. But in the last decade, most of the work I've seen, and it doesn't matter the age bracket, could be old burnout like Dan, writing a C-sharp code in the shadows of the night, being chased by coyotes of logic and the upside-down recursion of the Banshee Queen of Madness. Or you could be some young bloke out of politically correct university studying the ancient ways of cuneiform as a metaphor for F-sharp, yeah. I don't know. I noticed, and I call it Mary Poppins syndrome too, because what they started needing were people like Mary Poppins. People, one or two people who could just keep things working, keep things from blowing up. And it only got worse and worse and worse. You know, 20 years ago when I first got in, there were more people simply creating, but something happened. And the focus became just keep the ship from sinking. And so they need Mary Poppins. They need these magical coders to come along who can keep the ship from sinking, who can clean things up, who can get the house in order, who can get the chimney sweep to sing the chimney song of, you know, whatever. Refactoring. I don't know. The chimney refactoring song. But the thing is, all that refactoring and all that fixing, in most cases, the underlying thing was flawed. And no one wanted to admit it. So along with Mary Poppins syndrome, you have the whole the emperor has no clothes syndrome, where nobody wants to admit something that is obviously true. The last job I worked on at Microsoft, the underlying system was inherently flawed. And what was worse is that the replacement system, quote unquote, seemed to be just as flawed. And nobody wanted to say that. They were too busy going to seminars on how to re-engineer the toilet structure so people don't feel so bad about not knowing things about themselves. Great. But not so much about writing the code. And that's another thing about the blue badges at Microsoft that you might not understand. A lot of them are just apparatchiks in that Soviet sense. They don't really write much code. They just go around acting like scumbags. And that is Microsoft. That's the culture. That's right. Right now, the computer I'm looking at is running Linux. And what I dread is my reality that I have to work on a project where, just for simple facts, I have to do it in .NET right now. And I don't really want to. And you could say, well, you could run it on Linux. And I know. Because the Microsoft grift is about stealing and taking. And since Linux is awesome, it was inevitable that Microsoft would come along and say, well, we can just turn Windows into a skin. Duh. Linux has been doing that since the beginning. Unix has been doing that for a long time. They treated the UI like a skin, like a layer, outside the kernel, like an interface. What an interface is in the operating system theory sense, I guess. Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about Microsoft, but the Mary Poppins thing and the emperor has no clothes thing, you look at this and it's a very Soviet kind of thing. You know, I studied Soviet history, and so when I saw these things, it creeped me out. It made me realize, like, I worked on a project at Microsoft, I think it was 2014. I figured out for the 6 months I was there, the total cost of project managers and coders and database people, the whole number I estimated was probably $7 million of consulting hours over a six-month period. And from what I saw, nothing was accomplished. And you'd say to yourself, well, it must have been a really hard problem, like decoding the ancient scripts or reinterpreting the old computer of Archimedes so we can contact the Grecian people and ask about the Grecian formula. No, it wasn't about the Grecian formula, Jacques Cousteau, and your Cousteauizer. No, this project was something trivial. I won't say more about it, but it was very trivial from the sense of it should have been easy to solve. And instead, it became impossible to solve. This is the kind of stuff you saw in the Soviet Union at the end, not at the beginning. At the beginning, you had zealots, and the zealots solved most problems the same way. A bullet, a bullet, a bullet, a bullet, a bullet to your head and your family. A bullet to your head and to your family. That's how the zealots solve things in phase one. I don't care if it's the Russian Revolution or the French Revolution or the religious wars, okay, of the 16th and the 17th century. I don't care. In the first phase, the zealots tend to solve problems in the same way. They cut your head off. They take care of you because they don't have a better answer, because there is no way out. It's why the Tsar and his family had to die. It's because there was no way in which they fit into the world they needed to create, and they couldn't conceive of it. They didn't want the problem. That's how they solved the problem. But the thing is, and this you may find this hard to believe, most people are not Ted Bundy. I know you find this hard to believe. Russians are not inherently bad people. Neither are Germans. Okay? Most people are not evil, but they do get conned into doing really terribly evil things sometimes. And it is a grift. it is a con. And eventually, people, even the most devoted communists, say to themselves, I'm tired of the killing. I mean, why can't we just put them in, you know, insane asylums? Why can't we just put them in nicer work camps? You know, they won't be like the gulag. You can have yourself a family and have a cabin out in the middle of Siberia. Why can't we just be nicer? Because this murder day and night, it kind of wears on you, doesn't it, Mr. Khrushchev? And so you do. You get that moment in the Soviet period where they say, we're tired of killing. But if you stop killing, this is the problem. And this is what the zealots knew. You can only have the beautiful bonsai tree if you're willing to trim it. If you stop trimming it, it stops being a bonsai tree, and eventually it ends up being what it wants to be. And whatever that is, it will be. Something to think on, brothers and sisters, right? Whatever it will be. And I'm not saying all revolutions lead to tyrannies, but I gotta say, when I think about what happened to this country, I'm beginning to think that revolutions are a grift in a lot of cases. They end up starting out with high ideals, and what you end up with is a bill. And you say, oh, bill is due. And what did I buy? You bought murder and mayhem and death and destruction, and what you got in return was the same system you had before. Oh yeah, it's different. You know, you vote for Republicans and Democrats and you have your president. But if you really dig into what it's become, it's quite monolithic in terms of what it actually does that impacts your life. And in that sense, it's very, you know, much like a kind of Stalinism. But this type of system can't last. I've gotten a lot of information from friends lately. And I'll leave it to you, if you're listening on shortwave radio. This is 5950 kilohertz. This is WRMI out of Miami, Okeechobee. Saturday or Sunday night between 11 p.m. and midnight, Eastern Standard Time. This might not end up on the radio, but if it does, that's why you're hearing it that time. But right now is a different time, and that's okay, brothers and sisters, because whatever time it is, it's party time, right? But before I go on to the next topic, I just want to point out that I've gotten a lot of information from people lately that these types of things, these weird shortages, these imbalances, you know, too much of one thing, not enough of another, which again, you saw in the Soviet Union towards the end of the Soviet Union. It's eerie. And I got to say also, this whole Afghanistan thing, it does seem weird because it almost seems like a ritual. I'm going to throw that out there because it's a little bit creepy, but it's almost so surreal in the way that it's played, in the way that Biden has played his role. Because, folks, he has a dramatic role to play. I think it's a combination. I think it's more or less Hamlet. I think his role is to basically be the father that dies. And I think everyone else will be some type of fragment of Hamlet. But I think Biden's main role is just to be the old man that dies in some tragic way. Could be COVID, could be the Taliban, could be ISIS, could be the Russians, could be any lie they need to come up with. But he has a role. Like this is Hamlet, like he's the father that becomes the ghost that haunts people and beckons Hamlet, seek out the murderer, seek out the killer, find the guy that killed me, that gave me the poison, that murdered me. Find me the murderer, find me revenge, Hamlet. Because that way everyone will be okay. Get me revenge, Hamlet. That way, life will be normal again, once we get sweet revenge. Isn't that kind of the message after 9/11? We get our revenge and it's all fixed. They killed some people, so we're gonna get our revenge. it just ended up becoming a bloody mission that never seemed to end, and now it has, and it seems like a ritual. I'm going to throw that out there, brothers and sisters. Before we go to the next topic, just wanted to point out, finally, before we move on, stupid does not get 500 years. Stupid doesn't get 500 years. This kind of stupid, I think, gets an... I don't think it gets much more time. Maybe 5 more years, but they'll be brutal years, and they'll be crazy years, because you'll be looking at a 10 trillion ton crocodile filled with parasites that is dying in pain and distress. That is the best description I can provide. And the only smart play when it comes to 10 trillion ton crocodiles in distress is to avoid them. If you can avoid them, if you can find a way around them, that's what you do. I personally don't think it can last that much longer. So I disagree with the people who say, this is Nazi Germany, you know, whatever, this is Soviet Russia during the zealotry. No, we had our zealotry. We had the crapola as much as we could put up with. We did the killing we could do until, and this is the key part because I don't think most people are evil, until the basic spirit of America rejected it because it couldn't live with it, just like the Russians. Just like the Germans would have too. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of murky history around Hitler and the Nazis, just like there is around the commies. But most people at a certain point will reject the outright mayhem. They may still accept the government in the end, but what they don't want is the mass murder. I believe that's true. For all the propaganda about people who say, oh, I think unvaccinated people should be sent to an island, for all that BS, and I think a lot of it is BS, I think most people would not agree with that. And I think most people have a little bit of common sense. But what if they're right? What if the great empire, what if the Death Star is not a Potemkin Death Star? What if the Death Star is not a Potemkin Death Star? And when I say Potemkin, this is a reference to a Potemkin village, which is essentially a thing where you say it's fake. It's not real. It's like there's a facade. It's like the cowboy town in the old-timey movies where you have a facade, you know, and you have, you know, wood holding up the facade, and maybe you have some sides and stuff. But generally speaking, the sets weren't that in-depth. Probably, unless it needed to be. That's like a Potemkin village. It's fake. But what if the Death Star that we're all traveling on, and I don't care where you're living at, you could be living in Scranton, you could be living in Blinkton, you could be living west of the Rockies or east of the great river called Dread. You could be in Poland. You could be in France. You could be in Italy. Eating chocolate ants. You could be anywhere on the Great Orbis, and because if this does end up on shortwave, because it is shortwave, you could be receiving the reflected magnetic electrical energy waves bouncing off the ionosphere, bouncing off that layer of atmosphere back into your heart. You could be someplace on the Orbis where people only understand the Frinktus language. But my question is simple. Wherever you are, is it possible that the Death Star is not a Potemkin Death Star, but in fact it is well built? The Kurilian peoples, or whoever, the Skrillian peoples, the Chewbacca peoples, whatever people the Empire ripped off, they ripped off some smart people and they built a good Death Star. So it might be like an old Toyota Corolla. It'll run a long time as long as you change the oil. So, Vader, you know. And that's the thing. I think that's what Vader gets angry about. I think Vader thinks to himself, did the general change the oil? I mean, he should be using synthetic. We have over 80,000 light years. I wonder if I should call the general. Hey, general, did you change the oil? And the answer is no. And so Vader mind strangles, the general as Vader can do, as he is wont to do. Vader has wont to take his ability to mind strangle. And as I think I saw this in one of the more recent Star Wars films, Jedi can actually I thought this was total crap. And I think it was in either the second to last Disney Star Wars or the first to last. I don't want to get into debates how it got worse. It was never that good. At best you could say somebody read The Hero with a Thousand Faces. They read enough Joseph Campbell and Carl Gustav Jung, and they came up with the hero's journey narrative. And they added in some, reinterpretations of Wagner and a few other artists. And there you go. You got Star Wars. So it's basically, I mean, when you think about it, Star Wars is a Germanic saga that was mostly ripped off and then repackaged. And it ended up becoming a kind of gender-neutral, polycultural thing. And I'm whatever, I don't care. I don't care about your neo-Marxism. You live in whatever cube space you want to. Just keep it out of mind. You don't have a right to MySpace. Unless it's your MySpace account, right? But here's the next topic. It's called Until the Renaissance. And the reason why I ask this is because what if the Death Star is well built? What if it's so well built that it could last another 1,000 years? What if my belief that the system is falling apart is more based on my desire that it's true than it's actually the case? That in fact, I'm making the same mistake I made 6 years ago. I'm mixing up my desire with my reason. And whenever you do that, you come to bad conclusions. So, what if the Death Star is well built? What if the banker system is a great thing? What if they come up with a free energy cube called the Free Energy Cube 9000? And then they reveal that everything will be blockchain, and they'll have a cavalcade, and they'll have a gala. They'll have a gala, and they'll have dancing bears and probably clowns, and they'll have some type of master of ceremony at this gala. I think that it's possible that the system could last a long time. So, the question we have to ask ourselves, if we're anarchist, is what now? What do we do? If we find ourselves in a ghetto that was built around us, if we find ourselves carrying a quote-unquote smart device that is really just, a tracking device, and really every computer is. If we find ourselves mining Bitcoin, but really we're doing it in the system, but we're making money, and you know what? If we find ourselves making money and the system keeps going, then the Bitcoin people were right. They were right. You have to give them credit. They wagered that this crooked system, this Death Star, was not a Potemkin Death Star, but a well-built Death Star created probably by Chewbacca, probably Yoda helped too. Yoda's a weird guy. I think he has schizophrenia. So, yeah, Yoda and an angry Chewbacca, or maybe goatee Spock universe Chewbacca and Yoda, angry Yoda, they built the Death Star. They did it at Jekyll Island. More than 100 years ago, they brought Death Star architects from far away. They built the Death Star. Wilson approved it. It was well built and it would last for 1,000 years. Its armies would not be defeated. Its people would understand the secrets of Gumbulus. And people would love Top Ramen. They would love Top Ramen. They would hope that there's more asbestos. They would love Top Ramen. I'm going to leave it there. I'm sure Top Ramen's okay. I'm sure there's not very much asbestos. Who knows? As anarchist, how do you survive in that world? That kind of crooked world. I kind of think it's really a question of how brutal the sheep are, because you need to understand something here. And this is where Hegel got it right and Marx got it wrong, because Marx is not Hegel. Marx is at best a kind of screwing around with Hegel. But here's where Hegel may have more or less figured things out. Power structures are a kind of weird partnership. It's true, it sucks to be the prisoner, but there's always the possibility of choosing not to participate. You can choose suicide. In an existentialist sense, you do have that final choice. And I do think ultimately, if they want slaves, they can't have their slaves killing themselves. So there is a point at which you still have power, and in a way, there's a point at which you're still in agreement. And it really is a creeping thing, like you slowly let your torturer get basically more and more evil, and you think, well, they'll get this evil, but they won't get that evil. But they will, though. So we find ourselves in that system and its brutal version, which is like THX 1138, creepy as F, brutality and stupidity and control, and your life is fully channeled. It could end up kind of like some crooked Soviet brutality. I don't know. That would be crazy, but who knows? Whatever, or it could be like Pol Pot. And I gotta say, it could end up looking like some New Age cult / Marxism, where they talk about religious things that are probably satanic. They probably will do satanic things. Who knows? But what if the Death Star was well built? And I know I'm on a broken record topic here. Like, I had a bunch of subjects and I'm already well past the half hour point. But this is worth digging into. If it was well built and you're an anarchist or a libertarian, or anyone that believes in freedom, what do you do? I think maybe the crypto people could be right. In that scenario, maybe it does make sense to hedge your bets. I don't think that all these cryptos will be allowed. I think it's way more likely that one or two of them get adopted and a lot of them just get nuked. I'm sorry, that's what happens in a Soviet-style system. You know, spoiler alert. So if you bought some weird-ass coin that just made a lot of high percentages and you're wagering that the Death Star was well-built, then you should probably get out of it, because at some point in the near future, yeah, probably they will choose a few of them and then the rest will just go away, period. And your investment will go away with them, and they will not, you know, they're not going to write you a check. They're not going to say, oh, here's some money. They've never done it. Why would they start now? So if you think the Death Star was well built, and you think it has at least another 50 years, that it's not like Idiocracy. It's not that stupid yet. There are still people doing things that are quasi smart enough to keep this crooked, wretched thing rolling along. If you think it was a well-built fraud, that's what we're talking about, a really well-built fraud, a super-duper Potemkin. If you really think it was a well-built Death Star fraud, and it has another 50 years or 100 years, and you're old like me, what do you do? And if you think your neighbors have become brutal in the way that they want to treat each other, I mean, I mean it. What if they're right? I'm kind of flipping the script on you from the beginning, I think. Because in the beginning I said, listen, people won't put up with it. And that is probably dumb hope. I don't think people will put up with it. I think we'll follow the same path that other crooked regimes have. And I think we're near the end. But what if we're not? What if the people aren't as stupid? They're just, you know, they're just actually just clever enough and crooked enough to keep the fraud going, to keep the crooked stuff going. What if the Afghanistan thing is what is referred to in military science as a feint? That's Foxtrot, Echo, India, November Tango, a feint. It's kind of a movement you do to trick someone. It's like in football where, you know, players will move about and they'll shuffle and they'll change directions and trajectories because they're trying to confuse the opponent. You do a feint to confuse your opponent. You don't want them to know which direction you're going in. So you do something to create confusion. You either attack or you retreat. But the point is, you perform an operation that's basically deceptive. What if Afghanistan is just crap? What if, in reality, it's supposed to be a train wreck? It was always supposed to be a train wreck. What if the Death Star is so well built that they're going to do a 9/11 part 2 and people believe it again? What if that's how well built it is? And what if that's how brutal your neighbor is now? And what if your neighbor doesn't care how many people have to be ground to dust? If that's where we're at, and it has another 50 years or 100 years, or God forbid, and I mean it, I'm a Christian, so I say God forbid, if this kind of crooked stuff has another half a millennium, well, as a Christian, I have a lot of questions, but as an anarchist, I'd say, what do I do? Maybe I end up in the crypto world. Maybe I've had a weird idea about living on the basis of giving people, this is going to sound crazy, but I had this weird idea, like, what if I just gave my money away, but to people I trust? It sounds insane, but if you really think on it, you should have friends you can trust with your money. If you can't trust your friends with your money to basically take care of your money, And I mean, you know, rationally, if you went away or you were declared dead and they invested your money in cattle futures, that's kind of like, that's what happens. You were declared dead. I mean, can you trust them to watch your gold? If you don't have friends you can trust to watch your gold, you do not have friends you can trust to watch your family. That's something to think on too, brothers and sisters. But I had this weird idea, and it's not original. In fact, you know, there's this VONU movement, voluntary, not vulnerable. I'm not really super familiar with it, but a friend of mine pointed it out a few months ago. And it's kind of in alignment with my notions of anarchism as well, because it's all you can do. It's your only option. You have to figure out a way to hack the system and live within it. So here's the idea, and I don't think it's original. What if you just have good friends? And what if somehow you translate every transaction you do through these good friends? And they basically get money, and the money gets to them, but there's no real contract, no direct line. You end up living in a room that isn't your room. You might live in a cabin that you don't own. But technically speaking, in the ethics of anarchists and people who believe in liberty, they'll recognize it because they're your good friends and you gave them the money to buy the cabin and probably 20% more. And if someone says, oh, that sounds illegal, listen, I don't think it's illegal yet to donate money. It could become illegal. I don't think it is. And you do have to end up paying taxes on donations. All that ends up happening. But I think at the end of the day, the only way I could think I could live would be as a hobo, basically. In a hobo economy where every transaction is based on trust. And trust might not be great, but it's all I got. And so you end up saying, I'll do this for that. And I might not need that, but I know somebody else that needs that. So I'll take that and I'll get this thing over here. And, you know, in the black market, things can kind of work. It's not going to be perfect. And there'll always be a black market. This idea that the super Death Star could be free of a black market is kind of insane. It couldn't possibly work without one. In fact, if you want to answer the question, is there a calculation engine in tyranny, in that sort of, I don't even want to talk about it, like that stupid Zeitgeist movie, ERP crapola, I don't even want to give it the credence or give it the conversation. All I can tell you is the black market, in terms of Austrian economic theory, the black market is what kind of fixes, not really fixes, but sort of fixes the calculation problem for tyrannies. Because the black market ends up behaving as a kind of inner free market. And that inner free market resolves issues that the tyranny cannot resolve. And if it cannot resolve them, people will get angry. But the black market will resolve them. So even on the super Death Star, there's still going to be a black market. And maybe I could be a smuggler. You know, my grandfather smuggled whiskey, from what I heard. I don't know this for certain, but he might have smuggled whiskey during Prohibition. My grandfather might have smuggled whiskey from Canada to somewhere around the Swinomish Indian Reservation during Prohibition. That might have been the drop-off point. The trucks probably picked up that Canadian whiskey and took it to Seattle. The loggers and the fishermen, they needed to get drunk. They needed to get drunk as F. The loggers and the fishermen of Seattle in the 1920s needed to get drunk. And why not? If it wasn't on the job, if it was after work, why not? I'm not saying I'm going to defend it. I won't defend it, but why not? You know? So my grandfather, very likely, was a kind of gangster, a smuggler, a person that was at war with the Prohibition agents, the Probies. He was a guy that was probably tracked by the people in the Treasury Department. Who knows? Who knows? It's possible that we were marked at birth. Oh my gosh, these are Sullivans. We need to code their birth certificate, send it to the FBI. They're going to end up organizing some kind of scheme one day. I don't know. But he did what he had to do. This is the thing that we have to understand, because we were raised in an America where we were taught that this was a free country and that we live in a free country and we're all free, and it's as simple as that. But what if it's not that simple? And I don't think it is that simple. I think that the narrative of freedom left out a lot of little stories, stories that involved Native Americans, events like Wounded Knee, events like the Trail of Tears. These stories left out a lot of stuff, a lot of crooked stuff. And so, and not to exclude slavery, for example, and the way that slavery was dealt with from the beginning. When you think about it, if they wanted to create a free country, there probably would have been no more powerful symbol than to immediately say slavery is illegal. And some states more or less did that in the decades to follow, and I think pretty much immediately, but the bottom line is this. They could have agreed that all people are free. They could have done that. They could have lived by their principles. The Declaration of Independence is a beautifully simple document. It's not perfect. A friend of mine, Jim Davidson, and if you want to learn about him, you go to freedomlanddao.com. That's freedomlanddao.com. And he is a guy working on intentional communities based on liberty. But my friend Jim Davidson has a friend, and I don't always remember his name, but he wrote a kind of graphic novel, a kind of what if. What if the Declaration of Independence, was written slightly differently so that it required not just the consent, but the unanimous consent? That the language would have, what if the language had been different? And if it had been different, according to this theory, the Constitutional Convention, which was really a kind of coup d'etat, the Constitutional Convention would have ended up happening in a different way. And so in this novel, it's a kind of parallel world where America is just really just a much freer place. There is more freedom. There's more respect. And in that world, the situation for Native Americans would have been different, not just for African Americans. If we kept to our principles, it wouldn't have just been free everyone. It would have been respect everyone. And it wouldn't have required a law because free people don't need one. We turn the world into a toilet because we live in a prison. We turn each other into victims because we live in a prison. We torture each other to death because we live in a prison. But we really love our prison and we hope the Death Star just keeps rolling along. But free people can be kind. And free people can choose to show compassion, and free people can have a heart. And I'm sorry if I sound emotional, but it's just, you ask this question and it's the question that keeps you up at night. How did we get here? And then you end up asking the other question, what if we were almost here from the beginning? If we have to live on the Death Star another 10,000 years, and we want to be free people, then we have to find the cracks, we have to find the caves, we have to find the tunnels, we have to find the black markets, we have to live in whatever hole we can find. That is reality. If the Death Star continues, that is what we'll have to do. And it might be easy and it might be hard. It might be one of these really horrific Pol Pot-style tyrannies, or it might end up just being kind of a Latin American sham. And if it's a Latin American-style sham, it'll probably still be crappy. There'll probably still be soccer stadium episodes, and if you don't know what I'm referring to, use the internet. There'll probably still be outrages, but we could end up at kind of a Latin American tyrannical sham. We could. And I think I just made the dog bark. Because I got emotional, brothers and sisters. That's not right. You can't do that on shortwave. You're not supposed to do that in a podcast. Because people can't see the tears. And if they can't see the tears, they can't see the joy. Yeah. You can't see anything because it's audio. I think people ask the question how we ended up here. And then some of us came to the conclusion it probably couldn't have ended any other way. And yeah, I'm hopeful that we're actually at the end of the story. That is where my own personal touchstone is, that the tyranny, the part of this country that is corrupt, is about to cave in on itself. And so there is this window, and I'm not saying people are going to do the right thing because people are crazy and people do all kinds of crappy stuff. And who knows, maybe it'll turn out in a terrible way, but there'll be this window where, in some elegant way, we could say, what if all we ever needed was the Declaration of Independence? And what if all we ever needed to do was to take it seriously? To actually take it seriously, like that maybe it was supposed to be something read and understood. And no, I don't want people to harm each other. You know what I would prefer? That we just divorce ourselves. If you want to have a Pol Pot style Marxist society that turns the world into a toilet bowl, you go ahead. If you think there's some elegant Keynesian way to stack predators and have wars and not pollute the planet to death, you go and try it. We've been doing it for 100 years and we're killing things. Because we're doing things that are crooked. We're doing things that free people would not do. They wouldn't. But hey, we live in a fraud. If the Death Star could go on another 500 years, the oceans are going to be toilets. I'm sorry. That's what happens with tyrannies. You don't get what you would call anything like balance because they end up wanting to manage these things, and they manage them to death. So, in 500 years, the oceans are dead. If we actually lived in a free world, and you're going to say, Dan, you're crazy, but if we lived in a free world, we would have a fighting chance at restoring many ecosystems. And you want to know why? Because free people simply want to do what is right and dignified, what they can profit by without stealing. And I think most free people understand we share the water and the air and the soil to some extent. We do. And it's kind of crappy to poison your neighbor. It's kind of an interesting, simple concept. You don't poison your neighbor. Free people understand this. Prisoners don't. Prisoners understand toilets. Prisoners understand toilet paper. They understand whatever crooked grift they have going on. Prisoners do not care because their life is wretched and painful. So they do not care if nature is screaming. They don't, because they are screaming. And that is the great tug of war of abuse. If you've been listening on shortwave radio, this is WRMI out of Miami Okeechobee from the Swamp It Arises. My email address is me@iamsully.com. And if you want to get the notes for this podcast broadcast, you just have to go to dfgtc.org/show notes and you go to the right date. Make sure you pick the right date and you'll get the right notes. But some of these shows are tentative. But there are still notes. So even if it's tentative, there's notes. You've got the notes probably in front of you, maybe. But you can find them, baby, if you want to. Maybe we do have to live like rats. Maybe we do have to live in the corners and the cracks. Maybe we do have to find holes and tunnels and ancient passageways. Maybe we do have to cling to the sides of mountains, to the sides of buildings. Maybe we will have to build our own hobo spaceships. And 100 times out of, well, whatever, 999 times out of 1,000, our hobo spaceships will blow up. But every once in a while, they might work. And then maybe we do take off and go someplace else. And maybe that's what ends up happening. So the people of Earth can have their prison. And if that's what they want, they can live in their poop. And we go someplace else. And we live free. We die free. But we live.